Welcome to our gathering tonight. Here we share stories of ordinary people who have experienced extraordinary things. Sit back, relax, and warm yourself by Jim Harold's campfire.
Welcome to the campfire. I am Jim Harold, and so glad to be with you once again. And happy Halloween, everybody. It's that time of the year, one of my favorite times of the year, and I'm sure it's one of yours since you're listening to this show. And I thought we would do something super special this week, is we would go back into the archives and look for some of the best campfire stories ever. You know, I sometimes forget that we have new listeners, and we have a lot of people who did not start listening in 2009. So what I've done is I've gone back and I found some of my favorite stories and have included them in this program for your enjoyment. And by the way, if you want to hear a lot more classic campfire stories, check out my Paranormal Plus Club. That's over at jimharold.net. And there you can get them all. And actually, we have a Halloween sale going on. Originally, it was going to go through October 31st. I have made the executive decision to extend that sale. And we're going to extend that sale through, let's say, I'll tell you what, in the Halloween spirit, I will extend it through November 6th. That will be through November 6th. And then we're going to have to cut it off. So run over there, sign up, and hopefully you will enjoy many, many more campfire stories. One quick thing before we get started. I want to say happy birthday to somebody. Now, last week we did a birthday shout out, and somebody said, hey, would you do one for my boyfriend? That was Allison from the UK. She said, would you give a birthday shout out to Stephen? Well, yes, I will. Happy birthday, Stephen. And if you have a birthday shout out, you can email it over to me and you can find the contact information over at the website. I think it's a fun thing for a little bit of interaction. And also make sure you check out that virtual campfire thing going on over at Facebook. People are loving that. We've got almost 3,500 members as I speak, and that's absolutely free. And one more thing I'm going to tell you about, and this is totally cool, and I have a link in the show notes for this. Halloween night from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern, I am going to be doing a live interactive video Halloween party on a new platform called blab.im. It's just like it sounds, blab.im. And it's free. It's free to join up. It's free to sign up. And a lot of people out there are starting to use this great platform. And basically, if you come, you can just watch. Or if you want to call in, basically, you ask to call in. You sign up with your Twitter account. And then I bring you on, and you would be on live. Video and audio. It is so, so cool. So check that out. I will leave a note in the show notes how you can sign up for that. And that's over at blab.im. Well, I've talked enough. Now it is time for a supersized edition with some classic campfire stories. And here they are. To Utah, and we're talking to Leanne about a mysterious experience she had with a Ouija board. Leanne, thanks for joining us on the campfire tonight.
Thanks for having me. This is fun.
So, you know, I've said on other shows, maybe you've heard me, I am fascinated and yet terrified of Ouija boards. I mean, I think that it's one of those things like, oh, I want to check it out. I want to see if it's real. But I always have in the back of my mind, are these evil spirits? Is there something weird going on? And I guess there was certainly something that happened that was weird in your experience. So tell us what happened.
Okay. I was about 15, and my friend Bridget and I were looking for something to do after school one day. She suggested a Ouija board that she had at home. So she pulled it out, and we set it up on the floor. And in order to make it a little more spooky, I guess, we turned off all the lights and had just a lava lamp for our light, and it was set right next to the board. She started asking questions, like, is anyone there? And it would seem to be responding. And she asked for it to give us a sign. Mm-hmm. And we waited. Nothing happened for a while. So we moved on, and she kept asking other questions. Out of the corner of my eye, I noticed the lava lamp, all the wax was collecting into one solid ball, which I thought was weird.
Right.
So I kept watching it, and slowly it was forming into the shape of something. So I pointed it out to my friend, thinking maybe this was our sign. And as we watched it, it shaped into the form of the head of a devil. And it was so detailed, and there was no way a lava lamp could have made that much detail. Its mouth was open like it was growling. It had fangs. Its eyes were very angry. It had horns. And it was facing us, and it didn't move within the water of the lava lamp at all. It faced us the whole time. And then I said to my friend, oh my God, it's the devil. And we both took our hands off the board immediately, and it just went back to the lava lamp bubbles.
So I have to ask you, did you play with the Ouija board anymore?
No. I tried it one other time with a different friend, and I made sure every light in the house was on and all the windows were open, thinking maybe the dark had something to do with it.
And I'm guessing you didn't ask for a sign.
No. I've always been scared of that. And that was probably why I never wanted to see a sign that they were there.
Well, I mean, talk about a short but sweet story in the essence of just being just a kind of a wow story.
Yeah.
I mean, has it discouraged you from like delving into this kind of thing? And do you believe it was an evil spirit?
I don't know if it was evil necessarily, because it went away and it wasn't threatening. I don't know if it was something playing a joke on us, a spirit. I think it was something, and it definitely piqued my curiosity. I'm very fascinated with the paranormal, Ouija boards, tarot cards, things like all those things, because I think something had to have made that lava lamp do that.
Well, Leanne, thank you so much for joining us tonight. We really appreciate it. Ed is on the show, and he has a really creepy story about a crawling thing. Ugh. Welcome, Ed, all the way from Texas. Tell us about this weird crawling thing.
Hi, Jim. Well, I worked at a paper mill in Pomona, California, and this happened around 2004. And one night I was working in the basement. I mean, the basement sounds spooky, but it's actually ground level. Mm-hmm. So I was on a forklift, and I was inside the basement quite a ways. And at this paper mill, we recycle newsprint, and there's sometimes like staples and things like that have to be taken out, and they fall to all the heavy things fall into this container in the basement. So I was on the forklift, and this is part of my job. I pick up this container and I turn it, it rotates, and I let out all the water, and then I take it outside and I put it in the trash. But as I came up, and to the left of me is a long dark hallway. There's an electrical room, and then there's some water clarifiers to the other side, and in between there's a long dark hallway, about 40-50 feet long.
Okay.
And I pull up, I pick up the container, I start rotating it, and I'm looking at the edge of the container because I don't want any of the material to fly out. I just want the water. And as I'm looking to the side, I see something off in the distance about 30 feet, and it looks like a person, and it's crawling on the floor.
Ooh.
And within a matter of seconds, it's gone from 30 feet to about 3 feet from me. And I watch it as it comes all the way, and I'm looking down because it's coming closer. I'm on the forklift, and it comes about 3 feet away from me, and it just disappears. And I just look at it. I look to the other side, and I thought, well, maybe it was somebody, and they crawled underneath, but the forklift is too low to the ground for anybody to fit through there.
Right.
So pretty much I just didn't even empty it out. I just put the thing back down and I got out of there, and there was only about 2 hours left on my shift.
And I don't blame you. I'm like, let me out of there for sure.
Yeah, so I just went in my chemical handler shack and I just closed it up and waited the 2 hours. But as I was thinking about it, I could tell it was what looked like a person. He had a blue shirt on, like I could tell you, like a work uniform, like mm-hmm. a short sleeve work uniform. I could tell his ethnicity was white. He seemed like he had like blondish hair. Mm-hmm. But the strange thing, when I remembered, I couldn't remember his face. I don't know if his face was blurry or it looked like he just had skin pulled over his face. Uh-huh. And the way he crawled wasn't like a normal person crawling. It seemed like almost like a lizard. Like he knew how to crawl really well. Ooh. So this was on a Thursday, and we work rotating shifts at that mill. And that means we go from graveyard 1 week to swing shift and then days the next week. And on the next week, like 4 days later, on Monday, it was day shift. And the crew stays together. So I have the guy above me is a clarifier operator. And on Monday, we set up so I could learn his job. He would teach me his job. And there was a guy who broke his arm, and he was there learning also because he was on light duty. So I was on Monday, I was in the clarifier operator shack, and he was teaching me. And then all of a sudden he says, "Hey, Ed, I forgot to tell you. I saw something strange last Thursday." he worked over, like our shift ended at 11. He worked over till 3. And he said about halfway in between when he was working over, about midnight, he was going to check on some clarifiers. And he's walking, and right in front of him, he sees somebody crawling. So because like a lot of guys in that mill, we like to play around and we like run around and try to scare each other. Right. So he thought somebody was messing around. So the guy he saw crawling went behind a big tank, a water tank. So he ran to the other side to kind of try to scare him or catch him. And he said nobody was there. And he said there's no way he could have got past them. He just disappeared. But he saw him like crawling sideways. And what he said it looked like was this thing was bent over backwards crawling. Like he was crawling, you know, with his back facing the ground.
Huh.
So when he told me this, I hadn't told anybody about this.
What crawls like that?
Yeah, exactly. So when he told me this, I hadn't told anybody about what I had seen. I just put it like in the back of my mind. I didn't want to think about it. You know, I had a wife and a young child, and the job paid really well. So I was just trying to forget about it.
Right.
So the guy said, like, I turned very pale when he told me this. Then I told him my story. And with it, like the next couple of weeks, we went around and asking the guys who worked there for a long time about any fatalities that happened at the mill. We're thinking, you know, maybe it's a ghost or something. So there was two fatalities at the mill, like in the 70s there. One didn't fit the description, and it was kind of gruesome, so I won't go into that. Mm-hmm. The second one did fit the description of what we saw. And one summer, back then they used to have summer interns, like for college students.
Right.
And there was a college student. And he was working during the summer, and there was a worker there who was carrying a big electrical cabinet, probably like a 1,000 pounds, on a forklift.
Right.
And he was guiding this person, this college student, and the forklift was coming forward, so he was calling it forward. And then what happened, the intern tripped and fell backwards. The person on the forklift hit the brakes, and the whole filing cabinet tipped over onto him. They say that he was getting up when it just pretty much crushed him and folded him in half.
Oh, my God.
So that's who we figure we saw.
Wow. That's just really weird.
Yeah. That it's something that I will never forget, seeing that person or whatever it was crawling towards me.
Wow. And the fact that a coworker saw, again, going back to somebody else, confirming evidence, validation. Well, Ed, yes. That sounds like a story you'll remember the rest of your life.
Yes, definitely.
Well, thank you so much for telling it, and we appreciate you being on the campfire. I know you say you don't like to experience these paranormal things, and these are the, I think, the three things that have happened to. So for your sake, I hope you experience nothing else, but you're able to enjoy the stories for many years to come.
Yes, definitely. I love your show, Jim.
I hope you're enjoying these classic campfire stories, but I can tell you how you can get them all. Go over to jimherold.net and sign up for my Paranormal Plus Club. Now, over there, you'll get a lot more than that. You'll get all the back catalog of the Paranormal Podcast going back to 2005. And in addition to that, you will get access to live and archived video webinars with some of the best minds in Fortiana today. People like Lloyd Auerbach, Micah Hanks, Rosemary Ellen Guiley, Michelle Belanger. And in these video webinars, they actually give you conference quality talks, the same kind of conferences or same kind of talks that you would pay hundreds of dollars to go live to see. If you're a member, you can just log in and watch those at your leisure. And as we have them, we let you know and you can attend live. Most recently, Lloyd Auerbach has come on and he's in the middle of doing Parapsychology for Ghost Hunters. Part one is archived and part two is coming up November 16th. And I've got to get that link up on the site so you can register for that. So anyway, I am telling you, it is, you know, people have told me, great deal, great value, love it. Really, not a lot of complaints. Almost everybody has said that they absolutely love the Plus Club, even when some people will cancel for whatever reason, you know, finances or whatever, they say, I'm so sad I have to cancel and I'll be back. And guess what? They do come back. So I've been very happy with it, and I think you will like it. And now is our Halloween sale. I've extended this through November 6th. I've made the executive decision to keep Halloween alive for a few more days through November 6th. So sign up, and that's either for monthly or for yearly, and it's at jimherold.net. Now, another way that you can access a lot of great classic campfire stories is via my campfire book series. You can find it at jimheroldbooks.com. That'll give you a nice page where all of my books are linked up, and you can go right from there and click on those, and they'll take you over to Amazon so you can purchase. They're only $2.99 on the Kindle. I think that's a great deal for each individual set. I actually have a campfire collection of the first three books for $7.99. Or you can go whole hog and get the paperback editions. And depending on which one it is, they're between, I think, $13.50 and $14.99, somewhere in there. So each book is 70 stories of the supernatural, and they're stories called from this show. And in fact, probably some of the ones that we've covered in this episode tonight. So I hope you'll check that out at jimherold.net. I thank you so much for your support. I hope you have a blessed Halloween. And now, back to the show. And now we go to the great state of Texas. Velma is on the line, and this is one phenomena that I've heard of in the past. We've never had anybody on campfire yet with it. It absolutely fascinates me. And it's a story about your grandfather. Tell us what happened.
Well, I guess I should go back a little bit. When I was about 4.5 years old, back in 72, my father passed away. And I was pretty close to that side of the family. You know, as a child, and about, you know, in the 80s, as I was growing up, you know, life happens, and I just kind of, you know, swayed away from that side of the family.
Mm-hmm.
Well, about, I want to say the early part of 1990, my grandfather passed away. And unfortunately, I did not go, you know, to the funeral.
Mm-hmm.
August of that same year, which also happens to be my birthday, the latter part of August. I would have to say about 2 days prior to my birthday, I was at home. I was living in an apartment, getting ready to go to work. You know, I was working an evening job, and phone rang. So I pick up the phone and said hello, and I could just hear muffled. I had to say hello several times. Hello, you know, I could tell someone was there, but I could just hear a muffle like, really, really far away. And like the third time I said hello, I heard the voice call me a name, a nickname that only that side of the family called me. And I knew right away it was my grandpa. I knew right away. And he called me, look, my name being Velma, he called me Velmita. And I just kind of, I really got spooked. And I hung up the phone because, I mean, what's going on? You know, I didn't expect this. I hang up. I pick up the phone thinking I'm going to get a dial tone, and he's still on the line.
Oh, my.
So I just totally got spooked, hung up, and I just left my apartment because I was like, oh, my gosh, you know, I can't believe this. I didn't know what to think. And then, you know, I mean, I was made fun of a lot saying, oh, you got a long-distance call from heaven, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, no, this really did happen. And then, I mean, now I hear a lot of people having the same thing, so I know I wasn't going crazy. It really did happen. So.
Well, I think the thought process behind people who have studied this kind of phenomena is, you know, the deceased could potentially reach out in any way they could get a hold of you, and that would be a very vibrant way. And I assume that your grandfather had a very distinctive voice, so it wouldn't have been any other family member. You were pretty certain that was actually him.
I was 100% sure it was him. 100% sure. And for it to be around my birthday, that sure. Even, you know, clinched it, you know.
Did now that you've had, you know, almost 20 years to reflect back on it, does it provide any comfort, or is it just more of kind of a disturbing memory?
You know, I think about that. If I would have did anything differently, you know, it just really spooked me. I mean, going back, I don't know how I may have done the same thing, because it just, I hate to say frightened, because it's just something you just don't expect, you know?
Well, maybe it was just his way of trying to say that he was thinking of you and he wanted to say goodbye. And hopefully that can provide some comfort. Velma, thank you so much for joining us tonight on The Campfire. Two very interesting stories, particularly the story about your grandfather. I know that there are a lot of people out there who have experienced similar things. Next up on The Campfire is David from Birmingham, Alabama. And he's got a great story to tell us. Looking forward to talking to him. David, thank you for joining us over the Labor Day weekend. Can't wait to hear your story.
Thanks, Jim. I'm excited about sharing it. I share this story every year at Halloween.
Okay. So, ooh, that sounds like a good one.
It really is. It really is. So do you want me to just jump right into it?
Jump right into it.
All right. About 7 years ago, some friends of mine had some free tickets to see a comedian. I don't know if you know him, James Gregory.
I've heard the name before.
Yeah, he's a great comedian. Anyway, at our local comedy club, and they only had one extra ticket. So my wife graciously allowed me to go with my friends without her. And so anyway, we were all going to ride together. So I decided to drive over to this other town and visit my friends and ride over there together. And so what we did was when I pulled into the driveway, the husband was looking out the living room window. He actually was sitting in the living room, and it was a split level home. And he was sitting on a sofa and turned around and looked backwards into his driveway to see who was arriving. And mm-hmm. I saw him do that. And at the same time, I looked to the far right of the house, and his wife was in the back bedroom doing something. And she also looked out her window to see who was arriving at their house. And so,
okay. But
it's a split level house. So I came into the main front door, and yeah, I don't know if you know these type of houses, but when you go in the front door, immediately there's a staircase to you.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
So I walked up to the staircase. This husband walked to the left. He met me to my left. The woman came down a long hallway and met me to the right. And at the same time, both of them said, "Are they coming in?" And I said, "Who?" And they said, the people in your car. And I said, "No, I drove here alone." And they said, "No." The husband said, "There's a woman sitting in the passenger seat of your car. She's got blonde hair, and she's wearing a white blouse." And the wife said, "That's right. And there's a tall man sitting in the back seat wearing a blue polo shirt and pants." And the husband was shaking his head going, yeah, yeah, this is what we saw. So anyway, we all ran outside, and of course, we didn't see anything at all. The strangest part of the story to me is I've seen things, you know, pretty much my whole life since I was about mm-hmm. six.
Okay.
But the weirdest part of this story, the reason why I like to share it is I didn't see anything. Two different people from two different locations saw the exact same thing, and I saw nothing at all.
You know, in this case, I wish this were video for the folks out there listening, because when you said that, my jaw kind of slackened and dropped, because that's such a great story. Now, did that car or where you, I don't know if it's where you live now, did you have any apparitions or anything connected to the car, the place where you lived when you went to this, or anything else weird going on that could possibly tie into it?
No, not that I'm aware of. I have an idea who it might be. The young lady I won't mention because of the history that I think I had with this lady. But the man may have been one of my great uncles. Just by the descriptions that I've seen of him, and I've got a short update since I sent the email to you. I had forgotten about this story. My daughter reminded me. My daughter sees these types of things as well, and so. We were driving home from a soccer game, bad lightning storm. We're coming into our neighborhood, our new neighborhood. And as I'm turning into the driveway, lightning strikes near our home and everything illuminates. Now, I see personally myself the man in the blue shirt. Okay. So I see him standing at the edge of my driveway. I didn't say anything at all. I look in the rearview mirror at my daughter and she goes, I saw him. That's all she said. I saw him.
Wow.
And I said, what was he wearing? And she said, a blue shirt.
Oh, I gotta tell you, and I do believe certain people, you know, in fact, I was just interviewed for something in connection with the new book. And one of the questions was, well, do you think some people are more sensitive? And I think absolutely. It's just like anything. Some people have a better mind for music. Some people are more athletic. And I think some people, you know, have a greater connection with the spirit world. I just think that's the way it is. Why? I don't know.
I don't know. And it comes and goes. It goes through seasons. I mean, I'll see things for a long time and then nothing. And right now, nothing. Nothing at all.
Is that a guy in the blue shirt? No, I'm just kidding. We're on video, folks, as we're talking about this. No, I didn't see any blue. But thank you so much, David. That is such a great story. That's going to go down, I think, as one of my favorite campfire stories of all time. Thank you so much.
Thanks for your time. Appreciate it.
True Ghost Stories Campfire 3, now available in ebook and print. Get 70 spooky stories that will freak you out for less than the price of a fancy coffee. Go to jimharoldbooks.com today. Now back to the show.
Well, we have Adam on the line from Connecticut. And here is a story, well, not about Christmas in Connecticut, to quote that old movie, but Christmas in Vermont, and something very eerie that happened to him at that very magical time of the year. But this was magical, maybe in a different kind of way. Absolutely. Adam, thanks for coming on the show. Tell us what happened that very mysterious Christmas.
Absolutely. And thanks, Jim, for having me on the show. It's a pleasure. I'm a big fan of yours and everything you do.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Basically, a couple years ago, my family had rented out a big house in Vermont for Christmas, and my family, my father's side of the family, is kind of scattered throughout the East Coast up and down to Florida, so we don't really get to see each other that often. So we all went up to Vermont one year for this Christmas, and it was a really old house. It was kind of creepy, and, you know, we were there for about 5 days, and, you know, throughout the 5 days, some weird things were happening. There were some, you know, servants working there and everything, and they would kind of tell us some stories about, you know, the house possibly being haunted. And so, long story short, basically, we get to Christmas Eve, and when we got there, actually, me and my brother, we didn't have kind of our own room to stay in. Everybody, you know, there with kids and everything, they all kind of got the first pick of the room, so we were kind of just sleeping on couches and everything. And, you know, we'd sleep in different areas of the house. But Christmas Eve, we decided to sleep actually down in the main living area next to the Christmas tree and everything and, you know, whatever. And it got to be about 2:30 in the morning, I think it was. And I woke up, actually, and I see this just kind of tall figure at the top of a pretty big staircase. And the figure was just kind of sitting there. And it was funny. It kind of just like was kind of motionless. And at first I wasn't sure. I thought maybe someone had gotten up to go to the bathroom or, you know, even possibly sleepwalking for all I knew. And,
or Santa Claus.
Exactly. Yep. That was definitely a possibility. So I remember thinking, you know, it was kind of like just the silhouette of the figure that I saw. I couldn't make out kind of any facial features or anything like that. I remember thinking to myself, though, that it almost looked like it was wearing kind of like a tuxedo or something like that.
Huh.
It was very strange. And it started walking down the stairs. And I remember one of the first things I thought when it started walking down the stairs was how weird and strange it looked like when it was walking. It was the best way I could really describe it was kind of almost like it was like a puppet on a string in a way.
Right.
You know, it was very just unnatural kind of. And I remember actually, even like I said, you know, I had just woken up and at first I thought, you know, I was kind of like dreaming and I actually kind of, you know, rubbed my eyes a little bit and, you know, just to make sure I was, you know, conscious, you know what I mean? Cause this was kind of weird. And like I said, at first I didn't think it was anything supernatural. I thought it was just someone, you know, in the house. And, so it was kind of walking down the stairs in that weird, weird way. And it finally got to the bottom of the stairs and it kind of started looking around. Like I could see its head tilt back a little bit, like almost like someone who had like come home after a long time and hadn't been there. And it was like almost looking around like, you know, God, it's great to be back or something. You know what I mean?
Oh, I see.
It was really, you know, and the more I thought about it after it happened, the more I was kind of, you know, thinking that, you know, that was the way it was looking, you know, and, it was looking around and everything and kind of moving back and forth in kind of a weird wavy way still. And, you know, at this point I'm starting to get a little freaked out cause I'm not sure exactly what's going on. You know what I mean?
Right.
And then all of a sudden, you know, and this completely caught me off guard. I heard in a very weird, deep male's voice. It said, "Oh my love, what a mirror image we are." And I'll never forget. It was that. Yeah,
I just got chills.
Me too.
Literally.
I mean, when I was just thinking about it, you know,
Who was it saying this to?
That's the thing. It wasn't like, you know, at this point, it was still kind of like, you know, kind of almost like bobbing back and forth almost and kind of looking around. And it didn't seem to direct that to anybody in particular, which was the weird thing, too. And, you know, I've obviously gone over it in my head 1,000 times and I am, you know, it was very clear. And the way that it sounded when, you know, this thing said it, was it almost was like someone saying it in like a cave. It was kind of like a weird, like echoey type thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was very strange. I'd never really experienced anything like that. And, you know, so, and I'm 100% sure that it said, you know, "Oh my love, what a mirror image we are," you know, and I still don't really know what it means exactly. You know what I mean? Or exactly what it was, you know, if it was talking to the house or it was like, you know, I don't know if it was someone who previously owned the house.
It's interesting.
You know what I mean?
He said it was in a tuxedo. It was around Christmas time. So maybe it was
right.
A ghost from the past who had been dressed up for some kind of Christmas get together or Christmas party.
Absolutely. You know, it's so fun. I never even thought about it that way.
That's what comes to mind. I got to tell you, literally, that gave me chills. Now, the story is spooky enough, but that phrase, "my love,
right.
what a mirror image we are." I mean, that's the capper right there. That really.
Oh, absolutely.
That's probably the name of this episode, by the way.
that's so cool. That is so cool. Yeah, I mean, it's something that stuck with me, and it's just like I said, I still don't know. The next morning, actually, when we were all kind of having Christmas breakfast and everything, you know, I had asked, you know, everybody, you know, there was, I think around 15 of us there. And, you know, I was like, was anybody up going to the bathroom or kind of looking around the house or, you know, I don't know if someone got a little tipsy, you know what I mean, and was just kind of wandering. And everybody said no. You know, we were all, you know, nobody, you know, said they were sleepwalking or anything like that. And, you know, basically what happened to the apparition that I saw, it walked into another room that was kind of, you know, off to the right of me. And, you know, it just never came back. And at that point, I wasn't sure what to do. And, you know what I mean? I kind of just stayed there. I didn't really even get up to look for anybody. You know what I mean? I was just so kind of baffled that, you know, and I was up for about an hour afterward and nothing came back out of that room, you know?
That is absolutely freaky.
Right. And like I said, the next morning, no one owned up to it. And actually, my uncle said, after I had kind of explained a little bit of what happened, he said, you know, I meant to ask you guys, too, if anybody peeked their head into my room. And he said it was around 3 o'clock in the morning. You know, he was, you know, I don't think he could give an exact time because he was, you know, asleep as well. But he said that, you know, he saw his door open and the light from the hallway come in and someone peeked their head in and kind of looked into their room. And, you know, no one really fessed up to that either. So I don't know if it was the same thing or, you know what I mean? So that was kind of a little bit more, you know, just something to kind of confirm that, you know, maybe I, you know, really did see something, or you know what I mean, that someone else experienced it too, you know. So
yeah, whew. I gotta tell you, it's very, very chilling what you tell, and maybe somebody out there will have an idea what that means. What that phrase means, because it could mean so many different things, but maybe somebody out there, maybe that's a saying. You know, I don't know.
Absolutely.
So we'll wait to hear. But Adam, thank you so much for coming on the show, sharing that very chilling story. And we update from time to time when new information comes around. So we'll ask folks out there, the mirror image statement,
absolutely.
what does that mean? Let's find out. Adam and I are very, very curious. Well, Adam, thanks for being on the show tonight.
My pleasure. Thank you, Jim. It's been an absolute pleasure.
And next up around the campfire is Jay from California, and he has to tell us about a picture and some weird happenings. Jay, thank you for joining us around the campfire. Please tell us your story.
Okay, sounds good. Well, I was around 4 years old, and during the time, about a year before that, my mom divorced and took my sister with her. And my mom and one of her friends had also had a youngling that was 3 years old during that. And my sister was three as well. So it was two girls that were three and I was four.
Okay.
And my mom and her friend roommated together. And they got a place in Fremont, California. And it was something like a motel. During that time, my mom was in San Francisco and there was a garage sale in one of the Victorian homes. And what I was told is that she went down to the basement and there was a bunch of pictures. Painted pictures, not just prints, but real painted pictures. Still, some of them unfinished, some of them were completely finished. And what was interesting about this basement is on top of the ceilings, instead of just white walls, it was representing heaven, and the other part was hell as well. So it was a scene on top of the ceiling. And when my mom started asking around, it appeared the people were... I don't want to say satanic, but she mentioned something similar to that, something that worships more the dark side.
Okay.
And, but that didn't stop my mom from buying the painting. Basically what she did is she went in there, she found a painting that she thought was beautiful. And what it was a lady sitting on a rocking chair in a white gown and she had blonde hair. My mom loved the picture, so she took it back and, soon enough when she got there, she found a place to put it and it ended up being, in between the two, the upstairs and downstairs, the stairs had a midway where it would stop and then continue upstairs.
Sure.
And she put the painting on the way, the painting on the wall there.
And then so some strange, yeah.
Right. And then soon after that, this painting, and I remember this several times too, and I'm just a kid, would start to fall off of the wall. And it wasn't like the nail was bent or the sheetrock was loose. It would just suddenly just fall off the wall. And then my mom would hear the crash and go over there and put it back up. And this happened quite a few times to the point where my mom and her friend would start to think something weird's going on here. This thing just constantly comes off the wall. what the heck's going on?
Sure. And there was nothing wrong with the backing or anything of the painting. Everything technically was fine, but it still fell off. That would kind of get me a little concerned, but it sounds like that wasn't the only thing that happened.
No. In fact, there was a time where they threw a get-together party, and it fell off the wall during then. And I remember going up the stairs, and some of the adults were talking about it. My mom was telling some of the people, yeah, it just keeps falling off. Once again, there it is. It's off the wall. So from that point on, after the party, you know, I guess a few days went by. And next, what would happen in the middle of the night, and let me tell you, this place echoed a lot. For some reason, this apartment echoed. So if you're upstairs, you can hear things pretty good downstairs. And in the middle of the night, we would start to hear the faucet in the kitchen start to drip water. And you can hear the drips really, really clear, like drip, 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 drip. And it would continue, and my mom would go down there and shut it off. A few days after that, this is where it started getting interesting, and this is where all of us, especially as kids, started to somewhat get a little scared, is in the middle of the night, 2-3 in the morning, we would start to hear a lady downstairs crying really softly.
Oh, boy.
And we didn't know how to take it. I remember being in the room with my sister and my mom's roommate's daughter as well. We all slept in the same room. And I remember the first time it happened, my mom and her friend came to our room, opened the door, and just stood there. And we all listened to this going on. And they were too scared to go downstairs, but they wanted to come to us kids to be with us during that time. And eventually it mellowed out. And then the next night, it did it again. So my mom and her friend came to our room the next night. And the crying was just a little louder. And it was kind of like, it wasn't like really, the crying was like, like you can envision maybe her hands are on her eyes, crying, looking down to her lap. That's the kind of crying it was. And I just remember laying there, and we're just laying there, and we're all looking at each other, and we can hear this. And then a few nights go by, and it happens again. At this point, my mom and her friend are really scared, and we're all just like knowing it's going to happen again. And then about a week later, it got to the point, this crying, time the crying was so loud. It started off soft, and it got louder and got louder, and then it just went explosive. And this crying was so loud, you can literally feel the crying through the walls, like, just crying and bawling her eyes out, to the point where my mom and her friend and all of us were so shocked how loud it was and so scared. My mom immediately and her friend ran into our room, turned the lights on, grabbed this kid, didn't even put clothes on. It wasn't even like that. It was just like, something's going on down there and we're getting out right now.
I don't blame.
They grabbed us. Yeah. And when they grabbed, when we were grabbed, I just remember my mom grabbing us out of the bed. There wasn't any preparation. She just grabbed us and we all ran down the stairs at once. And I just remember my mom grabbing me and my sister and holding us up, carrying us. And then her friend grabbed her kid, and we all went at the same time. And I remember there was a pause before we went down. And then we just went for it. And luckily, we didn't have to pass the living room because the front door was right down the stairs. But if you made a right-hand turn and went down the hall for about 4, 5, 6 feet, then it cuts into the living room. So we didn't have to go in there, and that's where it was coming from. Now, I remember running out that door, and all of us were frantic. And I just remember holding on to my mom, and it was just loud and loud, and the crying was just so abrupt. And then we had to go around the community pool, which was right in front of sliding glass doors in the living room. And our sliding glass door didn't have curtains, so it was open, so you can see. And the parking lot was on the side of the pool.
Uh-huh.
So when we got around the pool and went to the parking lot, this is the part that freaked all of us out, is when we got in the car, we can see right past the pool, the gate at which you can see through the wires. It wasn't like, it was like really tight wires. It was really loose and open.
Right.
You can see right. I'm sorry?
No, I said right. Go ahead.
So when we got in the car, we can see right through the glass windows. And that's when my mom and her friend freaked out. Because when we looked, there was a lady with a white gown sitting on a rocking chair in the living room, just rocking, staring at us. And my mom and her friend freaked out and started to scream in the car, going, and I just remember my friend's mom trying to get the keys in the key lock, in the keyhole to start the car, and she couldn't do it. And I just remember us kids going, ah, we're just like, well, it's like, you know,
I got to tell you, Jay, I hear a lot of ghost stories. I talk to paranormal investigators and authors and things. You just gave me chills, and that's not an easy thing to do. That is a wow. So what happened after that? What did you guys end up doing?
Well, my friend, my mom's friend finally got the keys in the car. And this is like 2-3 in the morning. It's not like 12. It's like really wee hours in the morning. And we just drove straight to my grandma's house, which is about 7 or 8 miles away in the next town. And when we got there, us kids, we never went back. My mom had to go with some people and immediately evacuate and get her stuff and get out. And so did her friend. And from that point on, we stayed, me and my mom and my sister stayed at my grandma's until she remarried again. And
happened to the painting?
You know, my sister knows what happened to the painting. I don't really know. I don't know. I can't remember. And I wish I did, because I don't want to say, oh, she threw it away. Oh, she gave it away. I'm not sure. You know, but my sister knows, and I can probably update you someday, but, I'm more than sure the painting, she didn't keep the painting, and I'm sure it didn't stay in that house. I'm sure they did something with it.
Well, you know, it's interesting, because it would be interesting to follow and know the life of that painting, the total history of that painting. And if it did pass along to someone else, did they experience something like this? Because wow, the fact, what was the clincher for me was the fact you looked through those sliding glass doors and you saw that white figure, that woman in the white robe rocking back and forth, similar to the woman in the picture. That just blows my mind.
Oh, let me tell you, I will never, ever forget it. It's impossible. And it's funny when you're an adult and you look back at that and you think, it must have been a dream. No, it's not a dream. This is something we all experienced. And it's one of those things where when you're an adult, you can remember it as it is, or you can turn it off and pretend it never happened. And the truth is, it really happened. And we ended up at my grandma's house and we never went back. And that's it. I mean, right now, just talking about it, it's kind of hard for me right now because my voice is kind of trembling. If you guys can hear it, just remembering that incident was just scary as hell.
And as I always say, it is one of my favorite things when we get to talk to people, of course, in the U.S., but all over the world. And actually, it's very, very early for him. But Dave from London has been so nice to volunteer his story about a mysterious nurse from the National Health. Dave, thanks for staying up late and being on the campfire.
That's no problem.
So tell us about this mysterious nurse.
Yeah, it's the thing is, it's kind of a secondhand story. My partner, Paula, her family, they describe themselves as spooky. They're kind of, you know, you sometimes meet people that have got like paranormal stories, and they've got one paranormal story, and then you get like one person who just seems to, it seems to happen on like a monthly basis.
Right, right.
Yeah, and their whole family, it must be, I'm convinced that whatever paranormal experience a person sees says as much about them as it does about the experience. And
I can believe that very much so.
Yeah, their ability to see whatever this is. And I'm sure that whatever it is must be hereditary as well. Because, you know, I meet so many people that, like, the whole family has these experiences. My partner's family, they're just drenched in paranormal experiences. But, her mother, you know, has a lot. Actually, they have this great story about, because I was listening to your podcast, and a lot of people have got experiences with pets and things.
Right.
And when they first moved into their family home, her sister saw a dog running around the house and was about to ask who dog it was until it actually ran through a wall.
Right. Maybe you don't want to know whose dog that is.
Yeah, I know, exactly. Yeah. It was a previous tenant. But her experience was, her mum's experience was it's the most amazing experience I think I've ever heard. She quite often has her small operations. She's not particularly well, so she goes into the NHS every now and again. And I know the NHS is quite controversial in America at the moment.
Oh yeah, we're going to have our own NHS pretty soon, I think.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's better than having nothing. But
it's going to be interesting to see what happens. We'll see.
Yeah, well, she had to go into the NHS for a small operation. She lives in this place called the Wirral next to Liverpool. And she was in this ward after the operation, sort of recuperating with, you know, lots of people there. And but they're all asleep, and she was up quite late, just not being able to get to sleep. And a nurse came around and talked to her for a couple of minutes and asked her if she was okay. And I asked her if she wanted a cup of tea. Now, at this point, you know, Paula's mom sort of said yes, she wanted a cup of tea. But there was something about this nurse that she that seemed quite odd, but she couldn't quite place a finger on it at that time. But apart from that, she seemed to be completely normal. And she went away, and she didn't come back for ages, actually. I think it was about an hour before she came back with a cup of tea. And it was by then Paula's mom realized that she had a kind of an old-fashioned uniform on.
Oh, I was wondering that. That's the first thing that ran into my mind.
Yeah, because
I thought it was like a 1945 uniform or something.
Yeah, when she told me this, I was starting to think, oh, this sounds really kind of like stereotypical, like, you know, the haunted train going through the town at night,
sure,
and things like that.
Sure.
But in that, she came back eventually after an hour and gave her the cup of tea. And Paula's mom actually said to her, well, what's the deal with the old uniform? And apparently she just smiled at her and walked away.
Okay.
Well, the next morning, she sort of checked who the nurses were on duty that night, and there was only one nurse on duty that night, and it had been like a North African woman, so it couldn't, obviously it hadn't been her.
Right.
And she was became more and more convinced that she'd had some sort of like seen a ghost. These kind of things happen to her quite a lot, you know. Spooky things happening to her. So, and she goes to see, she sees psychics quite a lot. This one particular psychic. Usually, I don't really approve of psychics.
Okay.
Usually, in my experience, they turn out to be charlatans.
Okay.
But she asked this guy about, you know, this experience. She sort of described the experience to him, and he did whatever psychics do. And he said that he was getting a name, and it was Lily.
Mm-hmm.
So, the next time, Paula's mom went to this hospital for another small operation. She actually engaged one of the nurses in a conversation about, you know, goings on in this hospital, and that she felt that she'd had an experience in this hospital. And the nurse said, oh, what ward was that? And Paula's mom described, told her which ward it was. And she went, oh, that would have been Lily.
Oh, that's fantastic. Did she elaborate to any extent about that?
I think they had a bit of discussion, but, you know, I'm getting this sort of second answer.
Sure.
You know, I was asking the wrong questions. But apparently they'd done some research, because apparently this nurse, lots of people had seen this nurse, and she'd never frightened anybody. And she'd gone around sort of like just asking people if they needed any help. Whether they'd made her a cup of tea, all these people cups of tea, I'm not quite sure, because, you know, we've all heard about ghosts. We've all heard about even ghosts talking to people, but for them to actually
physically go and get you a cup of tea.
I know. I mean, I said to her, you should have tried to push it as far as you could go and try and get a latte or something.
But they probably didn't have that when this nurse was around. It
yeah,
makes me think how much the nursing uniforms have changed. I mean, I'm 40, and when I was a little kid, they wore hats and everything, and now it's totally different.
I know. I mean, you know, when I was a kid, I remember them as well. I mean, because I'm 41 now, and you know, nurses nowadays, they wear these horrible blue sacks. They're just terrible. And when I was a kid, the uniforms were quite sexy, the big skirts and things, and little hats and stuff. But nowadays, they just wear these sort of like, I think, things that are just easily cleaned in case they have to clean up sick and stuff.
So I guess Dave and I vote for let's bring back those sexy uniforms, nurses.
Yeah, sexy ghost nurses.
Well, Dave, it's been a pleasure. Thanks so much for staying up late and for joining us all the way from the UK. Well, I love talking to repeat callers. Tom is back on the line. He's been on before. And I must say, this is when I read just the text of this story, I just found it to be quite chilling, and I think you will too. Tom, thanks for being around the campfire again, coming back, and tell us what happened.
Well, Jim, see, my grandmother had a picture in her living room that hung on the wall, and it had a bunch of family members in it. Pretty much all the family was in this picture, and what happens is it's happened a few times before she actually caught on to what was going on. The picture would just fall off the wall.
Right.
And she would go over there, pick it up, look at the back, the the wire across the back of it wasn't broken. The nail in the wall was right there, like, you know, it wasn't bent down or anything for the picture to fall off. The nail was still in the wall. So she couldn't figure out why this picture was just falling off the wall.
Right.
But that's not the weird part. The weird part is that after a couple of times, she put two and two together and realized that every time this picture did this, someone in that picture within a month's time would pass away.
Oh, that's like something out of the Twilight Zone.
Yeah, isn't it? It's weird. My she showed me this picture one time, and I had asked her why it's not hanging on the wall, and she told me that why, because she, after like the sixth time, she's like, all right, I'm not hanging up this picture anymore because I don't want to know, you know. And
oh boy.
But yeah, she always had this kind of sixth sense. She would talk to my great grandfather, who had passed away, all the time. She would say that he would stand at the foot of her bed and talk to her and stuff. And she always kind of knew like things. Like with my first kid, I got a phone call from her before my wife had gone into labor, and all I got was, "It's a boy," and she hung up. Almost like a trance-like thing, you know? Huh. And sure enough, it was a boy. And she would do this to all other people in the family all the time.
Well, it's an interesting thing because we've had, you're my third caller tonight that mm-hmm. I've had, and every one of them has touched on something, and I think you may be touching on to it in a certain way, maybe without even realizing it. This idea of our consciousness creating something or manifesting something. Now, let me ask you this. Do you think that perhaps that the information was somehow transferring to your grandmother, was transferring to that picture? In other words, almost like a poltergeist, like somehow sure. she was like a radio receiver that was picking up the fact someone was going to die. And then the physical manifestation of that was the picture falling.
It very well could be, because the picture where it hung on the wall would have been exactly right across the room from her favorite chair she used to sit in, so that wow. she could just kind of sit there and look at the picture. And I wouldn't doubt it at all.
And she wouldn't even necessarily know it, but that was just the way it would come across. Now, you said this happened six different times. It fell six different times, and each time a family member in that picture died.
Within a month.
And maybe you said that, maybe I missed it, over how long a period of time?
This happened over a period of about a year and a half to 2 years, I want to say.
Oh, man.
Yeah, and then she just finally had enough. So
I'd get really nervous if I were in the picture and the numbers were trending down.
Exactly.
It's like, okay, I'm not putting this back up because I don't want to be the recipient of it. Yeah, reminds me of a story we had a few weeks ago of someone who purchased a photo, and then the photo essentially came to life. I don't know if you remember that one. That was a spooky one, but this is, I got to say this, Thomas, this is one of the most chilling stories I've ever heard on the campfire. And I think it's probably going to be the title of this week's show. Fascinating stuff.
Thanks.
Hey, I wanted to say something about my friends over at Fate. Now, you know, they've been reporting on the strange, the unusual, the Fortean since 1948. My goodness. Back to the Truman administration. And now is your chance to maybe catch up on some issues that you may have missed, because they are having this blowout back issue assortment sale. And let me describe this to you, because it almost seems too good to be true. You can get 50 assorted issues of Fate magazine from the years 1995 to 2013. Now, these uncirculated vintage issues cover the past 18 years. You'll read exciting stories that are still as fresh and timely as if they'd been written today. So take advantage of this inventory blowout sale. Again, you get 50 assorted issues. Kind of a grab bag thing going on here. It's a $298 value for only $30, and then shipping is $10. So all inclusive for $40. What a deal. 50 assorted issues of Fate and classic stuff there. Certainly check it out. Now, I believe they have an ad coming up in their upcoming issue for that. So be on the lookout for that. I believe that may be on page 118, this issue. But also, you can get a little quicker service by going over to fatemag.com. That's FATEMAG.com. Scrolling down on the right-hand side of their page, and you'll see this huge warehouse sale ad, and that's what you're looking for. It's such a great deal. You know, nobody does it better than Fate, and they've been doing it longer than anybody. Check it out and take advantage of this huge warehouse sale, fatemag.com.
Marco from New Jersey, who actually submitted one of the most remarkable stories I've ever heard, not only on this show, but anywhere. Marco, thanks for joining us tonight around the campfire.
Hey, Jim. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate you taking my call.
You know, folks like to go out maybe on a weekend if they have a significant other to go see a movie. Nothing like it. It's a lot of fun. But a few years back, you did that with your wife, and it turned out maybe not quite how you expected it. Can you share the story with us?
Sure, that's correct. Yeah, and it was April, I guess it was the first or second week of April of 2004, and my wife and I decided to go see a movie. Hellboy had just come out, the first movie, Hellboy. Mm-hmm. And we went to the local movie theater over there in northwestern part of New Jersey. No big deal. We just went to the movie. It was just a typical day. I'm not sure if it was a Saturday or a Sunday. We drove to the movie theater, pulled up, purchased tickets for, I think the show was, I'm not exactly sure, Jim, but I believe it was like 2:45 show. It was afternoon matinee we were going to see. Mm-hmm. And purchased the tickets, went in, did the typical stuff, went up to the concession counter and purchased popcorn and a soda and proceeded into one of the movie theaters. This is like one of those Cineplexes that have multiple theaters, like 7 or 10, something crazy like that. So went over to the boy that was taking our tickets, and he, you know, ripped them in half and pointed us in the right direction, and we proceeded to go over to our theater. We went inside the door, and I like to get to the movie theater a little bit earlier because I don't like to fumble around, you know, when it's dark and they're playing the previews. So we got there like, I guess around 2:30, 2:35, something like that. But when we got there, we, you know, pushed through the doors, went in, the lights were already down, and there was something on the screen playing. So I was like, oh, darn it. So we had to fumble around to find a seat. So we did find a seat, kind of in the middle center. And, you know, we thought previews were playing. Then after sitting down for, you know, maybe a minute or so, my wife and I, you know, kind of looked at each other, and we're like, well, this is in previews. It was actually the ending of the movie we had gone to see. You know, we could see that, you know, Hellboy was on there, and, you know, there was a lot of stuff going on. And about 3 or 4 minutes of that going on, the movie had ended. You know, mm-hmm. we had realized that this wasn't a preview. This was actually the movie playing. And kind of a little, I guess, like, you know, what the heck is going on here? So the lights had come up, and I guess people started, you know, doing what they do. They get up and stretch and start to head out to the back of the theater. So we both got up too. I think I got up first, and I had stopped somebody on the way out, and I was like, you know, a little curious, and I said, well, what show was this? And the gentleman had said to me this was the 2:45 show.
Right.
So that was the show we were going to see. So I was kind of a little, you know, I didn't really think much of it. You know, I went back over and I said something to my wife. Well, they're saying this is the 2:45 show, which is the show we were to go see. So we both got up and we kind of followed, you know, when everybody exited the theater, and we kind of went out the back door. And I went out into the lobby, and I saw the kid who took my ticket, which was literally minutes ago. Right. And I said, you know, you remember me? And he said, yeah, he had remembered me. Because at the time, I was a cancer patient at the time, and, you know, I didn't have hair or nothing. I guess he kind of remembered me from that. Mm-hmm. So he said, sure, I remember you. And I said, well, we came to see the 2:45 show. And he said, yeah, you know, that just let out. So at that time, still nothing like shocked or nothing, but I had looked down at my watch, and I'm kind of a time person. I collect watches and everything, so I'm kind of a stickler for time. I looked down at my watch, and it was around 4:47. So when I entered the theater, it was 2:35, 2:30, something like that, and that was 2:47. So I had looked at my wife and checked her watch, and we kind of realized, like, something's not right here. how was it 247, you know, 447 when we just walked into the movie theater?
Wow.
So kind of, yeah, wow is right. So we kind of just looked at each other and still not, you know, getting crazy with this. And just, you know, again, we went back into the movie theater and just, I don't know, spoke about it and went back outside and kind of checked the clocks outside in the movie theater, you know, the, you know, clocks on the wall, and I looked outside, and it was early April, and it's, you know, you could tell that it was later on in the day when we had, you know, that when we had just got there, the sun had gone lower, and I think we just realized, like, something weird is happening. You know, I think I had mentioned, like, oh, I said there were, you know, Twilight Zone music playing or something.
Yeah.
Crazy. How does something like this happen? So we're just dumbfounded. You know, I didn't know what to think or what to say.
So you were really missing almost 2 hours, right?
Yeah. It's weird. People have said, you know, this is literally, you're one of the very few people I spoke to about this, because people think you're crazy, or they will just, you know, poo-poo it and dismiss it. You know, people had said to me, oh, that's missing time, but to us, it didn't seem that way. It was like we walked through the door into that movie theater, and like in an instantaneously, 2 hours, 2 minutes, or 5 minutes had just breezed by, just like a blink of an eye.
So you've accounted for walking into the wrong theater, and I guess you said the one gentleman said it was the 2:45 show. So you've accounted for, and they weren't showing it on multiple screens or anything strange like that.
Everything. Yeah, I'm glad you said that. That's exactly what we did too, because we were confused. We thought, I think there's 7 or 10 screens in this theater. So we walked around. I said, you know, I asked the young guy, and I said, you know, is this playing in other, you know, screens? And he said, no, this is the only one that's playing on. And I had told him what had happened, and he remembered me, you know, again, I said before, and he said, yeah, you came in a couple hours ago. And that's when I kind of really, like, when he said to me, you came in a couple hours ago, I was like, I think it was like somebody had punched me in the gut. And I was like, oh my God.
So subsequently, I mean, have you done any research or talked to anybody or maybe talked to other people who've had missing time? I mean, have you followed up with any investigation of your own to try to figure out what happened?
Not really. You know, I did the typical things. I kind of, you know, I kind of Googled, searched about it. And, you know, you come up with people saying that they've been abducted or they have missing time. The only other thing that I think that was of interest to me was, you know, I've read stories of people saying that they were, say, on a road trip going from, say, New York City to maybe like Myrtle Beach or something. It was maybe a 10-hour trip,
right?
And they got there in 5 hours or something. You know, they were just so busy and they got there in 5 hours. That's the only thing that I think of that has come close to that. My wife is a straight shooter. I mean, she's not into anything paranormal or bizarre, right, or whatever. So I'm glad she was there with me, because it kind of validates the fact that, you know, something really, really bizarre happened. I mean, you know, we walked around the theater for a while. You know, we kind of, you know, people would say, oh, isn't that shocking? But, you know, at the time, we were just, you're in such disbelief that something like that could happen. We actually went in and we watched the, I think it was like a 5 o'clock show. We went in and watched it.
Yeah, I was going to say, did you ever get to see the movie?
Yes, we did. We got to see the movie. You know, so the thing with the time, you know, it just made me think, like, what's going on that whole 2 week period, you know, especially with the time thing. You know, people say to me, well, you were missing time. I don't know if I was missing time or whatever. I just know that we walked through a door and 2 hours and 5 or 10 minutes had gone by in a blink, in an instant. You know, we were there. I still had a glass, you know, I still had the soda in my hand. We still had the popcorn, because people asked me, well, was the popcorn gone? You know, did you feel anything? I said, no, you know, it was nothing at all. And we felt normal. You know, everything was normal, but, you know, it was weird. The sun was down farther. The day had, you know, drawn on, and it just kind of, you know, how do you tell a story to people? Nobody believes you, or they think you're crazy. Or
no, I know what you're saying. Now, do you think this in any way could have been, and I hope you're doing well now, but had this, do you think maybe this somehow had some kind of connection to your illness? Was somebody trying to get a message to you, tell you something? Have you made any mental connection with what it could have been?
I have no idea. You know, I was going through a really hard time then. You know, I had stage 3C cancer, and that spread all through my body. So we were going to the movies a lot, just as a distraction, you know, just for me to be around people and everything. But my mental, you know, my mind, everything, I was in good spirits. I was in such a positive state. And I have no idea. I don't know. You know, we don't really talk about it. My wife and I, the only time we ever talk about it, Jim, is if, you know, that movie comes on or you see something, you know, Hellboy.
Right.
Behind. Then we'll be like, that's the movie when we time
wow.
something happened. And then, you know, people say, you know, that's when we'll tell people. They're like, well, what do you mean the time thing? And we'll tell them, and they're like, that's crazy, you know. Have you told anybody? But we're like, no. Nobody's going to believe you, or nobody's going to – people just aren't going to – you know, they're going to think you're crazy.
Well, we don't think you're crazy here, and I thank you so much for sharing your story tonight on the campfire, and I hope that all's well with you and your wife.
It sure is. I appreciate your time, and I appreciate you letting me share my experiences, for sure.
If you like The Campfire and the Paranormal Podcast, you'll love Jim's Paranormal Plus Club. Go to jimharrell.net right now to join the Paranormal Plus Club. Now, back to the show.
Well, our next caller is T.I. from Michigan. She is a new listener. I believe her daughter introduced her to my programs. I'm so grateful not only to gain a new listener, but folks, I've talked to T.I. about this story, and I've got to tell you, if you're the person who scares easily, turn on a light. If you have a significant other, hold on to them, because you're going to hear one of the best campfire stories we've ever had. And I'm really excited about it. T.I., welcome to the program. Tell us about the Roadhouse Saloon, because it's apparently quite a mysterious place.
All right. Well, thanks. Thanks for calling. This took place up in way northwest Wisconsin, way in the Northwoods.
In Wisconsin,
and my friend
right?
and I, in Wisconsin, yeah, way up north there, we have a family place over that way. And my friend and I had been, we'd gone to see a band play that was about an hour, maybe a little bit further away from where we lived. And we were going to listen to the music, and then I was going to talk to the musicians about finding some gigs or something for the following winter. They were friends of his. And so we stayed till the band stopped playing and then visited with them a while. Well, as we were driving back, that long dark night, it was one of those nights where there was no moon, where the moon set really early. And up in this area, I don't know if you've ever been in really pitch darkness.
Yep.
But the only light is the stars. There's no ambient light. There's no cities or towns anywhere for miles and miles where we were driving. And it was the only light was our headlights. And as we were driving along, nature started to call. And we needed a place to stop and use the restroom. Well, there is no place to stop to use a restroom. And we were thinking maybe there will be a all-night gas station or something, but there was nothing. My friend could have stopped and pulled over in the woods, but I walk with canes, and I was not able to do that. So I'm like, mm-hmm. Keep going, just drive fast. So as we turned down the last highway that we were going to head just a little bit south, we were about a half hour, maybe a little bit more from home. And right as we turned there, like a beacon in the darkness, was the Roadhouse Saloon. And it had the bright neon lights, you know, with the beer signs in the windows.
Sure.
And the big neon, you know, Roadhouse Saloon signs.
Like something out of a movie.
Just like out of the movies, yep. And this is like 3 o'clock in the morning. Now, there's bars don't usually stay open that late. But we
I thought 2 o'clock is typically most places closing time, but.
That's right. But this was way late past closing time. And we saw it there, and I said, just stop, pull in, and I'll use the restroom. We'll stay for a little while. And Bob at this point said that he was glad it was open because he's an artist, and I'm an artist too. And there was a mural that he knew about and he'd heard about at this place, a painting. And so we got into the parking lot, got out of the car, and when we opened up the bar door, there were all the people in there. There were probably 8, maybe 10, I don't know, folks in there. It wasn't like 2 or 3. There were at least 8 people in the bar. And everybody instantly turned to us and said, hi, come on in. Now, the bartender was this big, burly, muscular guy with one of those skinny strap T-shirts and just a white T-shirt and tight jeans and big strong arms, and he's leaning on the bar and just grinning at us and sitting. It was one of those bars that is like a horseshoe shape, and there were a couple three women sitting on one side, and they were drinking. They had their drinks in front of them. They just looked at us and grinned, and the guy closer to us was a younger guy, and he gets up, and he's got his glass in his hand. He says, come on in, and he smiles, and he's got these kind of nasty brown stained teeth, like he's smoking and drinking. It's all over his kind of throat. But, and so I just looked at Bob and he said, order a couple of beers. I'm going to the ladies' room. So I went right into the restroom. The light was off when I got there. I flipped the light on. And when I got in there, something, you know, I used the bathroom, and as I washed my hands, I noticed that there were no paper towels in the bin. And that the bathroom was like spotless clean, that it hadn't been used. Now, this is like 3 o'clock in the morning, and these women sitting at the bar looked like they'd been there since probably 6 or 8 o'clock. And my first thought was, ew, they've been here all night and they've washed their hands. And then I thought, well, maybe they're closing up and not cleaned up, but you know, so I just poo-pooed that and came out and we sat, Bob had came to me and my friend and we walked over toward the mural. And as we passed, they had this beautiful old jukebox that was one of those round topped ones.
Oh yeah.
Old fashioned one. And it had records in it. And 45 records. And sitting at a table were two guys that were playing cards, maybe three. And then there were a couple of guys playing pool at the pool table. And as we passed them, nobody was talking. It was just quiet in place. They just kind of watched us. And we walked over and looked at the mural, and we were talking about it. And it was really interesting. It was painted like the set would be painted on a stage. So things like faded out at the side, and it was real sharp towards the center and in places. And as we were looking at it, I looked at it was a scene out of a Western saloon. And there was a table with people playing cards, and there was a billiard table and everything. And as I looked at the painting of the people playing cards, I looked back over to the two guys playing cards at the table, and it was them. It was their faces. It was them. They were in cowboy costumes, but it was them. And I said, Bob, look at that's those guys. He goes, and he says, doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo. He says, yeah, they probably, you know, it's probably their family or something. Of course, the artists would paint the people that frequent here. These people are obviously regulars. So we were just looking at and we finding everybody else in the bar. You know, and we spent the time, we found the ladies, we found the bartender was not the bartender, he was the cowboy over in the corner, and, you know, just all this, the people, every single person in that bar was in that mural. So then we decided that, oh, then the younger guy goes up and goes to the jukebox and puts a record on, and it was Let's Twist Again, like we did last summer.
Yeah, Chubby Checker, yes.
Chubby Checker, yep. And I love that kind of stuff. And he comes up to me and he says, hey, you want to dance? And he was kind of funky, you know. So I pointed to the kid and I said, sorry, I can't dance. I apologize. And he just kind of teeters off. And that was the first, you know, other than hello that anybody said. But the record played again. And then we were looking, we finished our beers and we thought, well, let's have one more. And then we head out and we were going to look at the records on the jukebox again. Ordered another beer, sat at the bar for a little while. And the people across didn't talk to each other. They didn't talk to us. You know, we tried to like engage them in conversation saying, you know, what can you tell us about the mural? Is this, who painted this? Are you guys in this mural? And they're just kind of smiling at us, nodding like they didn't speak English or something, or we were speaking a foreign language or something. But there was just like no response to our questions to them.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
we thought, oh, okay, well, whatever, you know, we're up north. And we had like an inch or so left in the beer and went back over to the mural to look at it some more, to give ourselves something to do. And as we got there, as we were walking up, in the center of the mural were those old-fashioned swinging doors into the saloon, like in a 60s television western. And as we got closer, we saw like the shadows or outlines of people in the doorway coming in. And we hadn't noticed that when we'd looked at it before. And it was just starting. It was like it was shadow, but it was in grays, but there was some color starting to like the artist had started to paint some color in to give the illusion of somebody coming toward inside. And as we got closer, I just grabbed a hold of Bob's arm and I said, "Oh my God, look at that." And the two figures. Now, I told you I walk with a cane and I was wearing a longer skirt and my boots. And as the female that was directly in front of me mirrored looked exactly like me. It was a woman with a longer skirt with a pushout that I had and a cane and curlyish hair. The guy standing next to her looked exactly, you know, the height difference. It was us. It looked exactly like us. And I said, "Oh my God, that's us." And Bob said, "Let's get the bleep out of here." And we just set our beers down and we went as fast as we could to the door. And as we started to leave, everybody just kind of stood up like, "Wait, where are you going?" And we got out the door and the door closed behind us and instantly it was pitch utter blackness.
Wow.
Those neon signs that had been lit up were, there was no light. I just froze because I was afraid I would fall, not being able to see. And my friend said, "I'll stay there. I'll go turn on the car lights so that you could see where we are." But it was completely black. The windows were still there, but the neon signs, everything was off. There were no cars in the parking lot at all. We got in the car and we just sped out of that parking lot, spinning up stones behind us. And as we were driving down the road, we were like, "What was that? What happened?" And the more we talked about it, we like freaked out. You know, people disappear all the time. They would found our car in the parking lot and we wonder what happened to us. You know, we'd be on America's, you know, most wanted or whatever. I don't know. So when we got back, my sisters and family, the next morning, we told everybody this story. And they're like, "Yeah, right, you're right." But it was clear that we were freaked out.
And well, I would think so, because I would have the feeling, geez, I would think it's one of those things where, you know, my feeling would be, if I would have stayed there, would I have somehow been captured and put into that painting?
That's right. That's how we felt. We felt like if we'd have not noticed that color defining itself, you know, it started, we didn't notice it at first. I don't even know if there was a gray shadow of people in the doorway when we first looked, because we were looking for everybody. And I think I would have noticed a shadow of a woman with a cane in the doorway. And I didn't notice it then. And it looked like there was color starting to grow in it, you know, and it, like it was an unfinished mural. I don't know. Maybe they were trapped there. And I have no idea what happened. I have no idea what that could have been. But the next day, or a couple days later, after telling my sister, Mary, we took a field trip up there.
Right.
And went there not late at night. We went there when it was still open. And the mural was still there. And the same faces in the mural. And I went up, the bartender was this young woman. And I said, "Hey, where's the other bartender?" And she said, "What other bartender?" And I said, "The other night I was here and there was a young guy, big, you know, funny looking guy." And she says, "Me and my dad are the only bartenders here."
Oh my gosh.
And the other people weren't anywhere there. And the mural was there. There was nobody in that swinging doorway. And the jukebox was a jukebox with CDs. It did not have.
Oh my gosh.
See, and nowhere on that jukebox was Twist
Let's
Again
Twist Again or anything. Yeah. Now, okay, so do you think that you walked into some kind of weird time warp?
I have no idea. Like I said, I'm sensitive to ghosts. I've been experienced haunting since early childhood, grew up in a haunted house and am very sensitive. I have friends that when they're going to buy a house or rent an apartment, ask me to come and read it and see if it's going to be bad energy or not. And so I'm really sensitive to that. And I picked up nothing in that place. When I walked in, for me, I get this like butterflies in my stomach and kind of I can feel it in different places in my body. It's like a physical feeling, almost like a smell, that intense, that pungent kind of sense that you know something is there that you can't see. Nothing like that. I had no inkling what was going on. I was completely blindsided. I have no idea what it was. Maybe somebody who's listening knows something about if those kinds of things happen to anybody
wow.
else, or if there are places that where these things happen, I have
yeah,
no.
I know that's a little bit longer, that this TI has been a little bit longer than our typical story, but my goodness, what a story it is. I hope that other folks out there will be able to maybe give some potential explanations. And my goodness, what a great experience though. What a great story to have to tell, you know?
Well, thanks. We really felt like we got out of there within seconds of not getting out of there.
Yeah.
It was something. Yeah. So,
well, I'll tell you, there you go. Well, I thank you so much for joining us tonight on the campfire. Boy, was that a great story. Thank you so much. I know in our correspondence, you have to get up early and you deserve a good night's rest after telling us and sharing such a great story. Well, we're going to wrap the show up tonight with Beth from North Carolina. She's been on the show before with a very poignant story, I think, and one that's a good one to finish out the show tonight. Beth, thanks for coming on the show once again. We didn't scare you away the first time.
Oh, no. I love your show. Are you kidding? I love it.
Thank you. Thank you. So tell us what happened. I thought it was a very touching story.
Well, it's about my grandfather. In the summer of 1997, it was August of 1997, I was working for my parents. I had gone to work that day. They owned a car lot, and my job was to, check the cars in the morning, make sure there was no vandalism or anything, you know, everything's locked up. And I was making my rounds that morning, and I come across a tiger butterfly on the concrete on the lot. And it was dead, but it was beautiful. It was perfectly preserved. You know, it was beautiful. It wasn't damaged or anything.
Right.
And I've always been kind of a cynic. I'm not a big crier, but I picked it up and I just had this well of emotion, and I went into the office to my mom and I showed her the butterfly, and I just couldn't stop crying. It was just so absurd. You don't cry over a dead butterfly.
Right.
And, she was, it's okay, you know, and she was very understanding about it, but she didn't understand it either. But a few minutes later, the phone rang, and it was my grandmother saying that Papa, he had lung cancer for several years at that point. And she called and said the ambulance had come to pick him up because he thought that he was dying, and this was not the first time that he had had that fear.
Right.
Cancer, it's so hard on the body.
Oh, it's a horrible thing.
It is. And so I said, should I go with you to the hospital? And she said, no, you stay here at the lot, and I'll call you if I need you to come up there. And I said, okay. And she went on up to the hospital, and I stayed. Wasn't long, probably about 45 minutes or so.
Mm-hmm.
He called and said, you need to come on up here. And I locked the car lit up real fast. I don't even think I set the alarm. I just locked up and ran. And I think I ran every stoplight. It was a small town, so there wasn't a whole lot of stoplights, but I think I ran every single one to get to the hospital. And when I got there, my uncle said to go on back, and I went back, and I got there just in time to see him take his last breath. And I'm sorry.
No,
it's been a long time, but it's, I apologize.
No, not at all.
So I know that I screamed something. I either know or something. I screamed something. When the doctor said that he was gone, because I you don't want to let him go. And anyways, after he passed, we all went back to my grandmother's house, and, there was sweet tea and fried chicken, and, everybody's already bringing stuff over.
Sure.
And, but I just, I just needed to get away. So I wasn't hungry. I just needed some space. And so I went for a drive in the country, just kind of aimlessly. And while I was driving, I saw a little pond on the side of the road. And I pulled over and just kind of got out and was sitting by the pond. And I will never be able to find the place again. It was just one of those places on the side of the road. I was sitting there and this huge swarm of tiger butterflies were everywhere. excuse me. 20 or 30 of them. Mm-hmm. They were in my hair. They were on my shoulders. They were on the grass at my feet by the pond. I mean, they were everywhere.
And that's something you don't see every day.
No, I had never, and certainly not touching me. You know, if you saw them, they might be passing by on a breeze as they'd migrate on, but never just all of a sudden here they are and I'm surrounded by them and they're on in my hair and on my shoulder. And then they just took off. And it was just magical. You just kind of sit there and say, did that really happen? Because it was so fast. I mean, it felt like forever while they're touching you, but then they're gone. And to this day, you know, I've told my mother this story, and it's kind of a bond we have now, because to this day, if I'm having a bad day or if my mother is having a bad day, it can be, and I kid you not, it can be the dead of winter when, you know, there's no bug anywhere outside.
Right.
And there will be a little tiger butterfly or a little yellow butterfly that will go by on a day that you need to see it. It is just the most bizarre thing in the world.
Well, it might be bizarre, but I think it's very poignant and very touching. And speaks to me that, you know, I do believe our loved ones in some cases try to communicate with us, and it sounds like that's exactly what's happening in your case,
honestly,
it sounds like a blessing.
I honestly believe that. I do.
Thank you, Beth, for coming back on the show and
for
sharing that very personal, touching story. I hope you enjoyed that show as much as I did. It was great to roll back the hands of time and listen to some of those great, great stories. I can't believe I've been doing this for 10 years in general, in the campfire for about 6.5. It's amazing to me. But I couldn't do any of it without your support. So I thank you for supporting our sponsors. I thank you for supporting our Plus Club, for buying the books, because all of that powers what we do. So please don't forget, check out the books, check out the Plus Club, and also find me on Blab, this new platform. Very intriguing. Kind of think of a call-in radio show with video. It is awesome. It's blab.im, blab.im. That's free. So go over there, sign up, and I'll actually have a link in these show notes to show you how you can, they call it subscribe. I think they send out an email when, or notify you when my Blab goes live. That's going to be Halloween night. That's Saturday, the 31st, of course, between 8 p.m. and 10 p.m. Eastern. I actually have to cut it off at 10 because I have a daughter I have to pick up from a Halloween party. Duty calls as a father. But we'll have a good time between 8 and 10, and I very much look forward to it. And happy Halloween, everybody. Please, if I don't see you on the Blab, have a safe Halloween. Remember, have a good time, but be smart. We want to see you around and get your stories and share our stories, and we want you to be around a long slant of time. So be safe, make sure your kids are safe, and we'll talk to you next time. Happy Halloween, everybody, and as always, whether it's Halloween or not, stay spooky. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Jim Harold's Campfire. Tune in again next time for more stories of ordinary people who have experienced extraordinary things.